I want you to picture this. Imagine that you're on a very long walk. In fact, this walk is going to be about 3 to 5 days of walking. You are with your family and your extended family, and actually a whole community is with you walking. The ground is brown and yellow, and it's very dry and dusty and rocky. There's a small path of eroded soil where you can walk, but it's very narrow and it's all uphill. This is the walk that many Jewish people made 3 times a year as they walked up to Jerusalem from their various cities for the festival of unleavened bread, for the festival of weeks, and the festival of tabernacles. So to pass the time and to keep their minds off how tired and how exhausting this walk was, they would start to sing. Almost like a playlist that we put together when we're going on a long road trip. And maybe you could even hear them singing, "I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming in and your going out, both now and forevermore." And as they were walking, I imagine that they knew very well about tripping over rocks on this dusty path that they were on, and the sun's heat burning them by day, and worrying about thieves or wild animals harming them. This might even have been the path that the man who was looked after by the Good Samaritan was on as he was walking to Jerusalem. And through it all, they would know that at the end of this very long, exhausting walk, they were going to experience time with God. And they were going to experience time with their community together, celebrating and thinking of something. And so they were trusting God to help them on the long, dusty, tiring journey up to Jerusalem. Now, figuring out who we can trust takes up a lot of our lives as well, because we need people that we can rely on. We need lots of people who can manage to do stuff. When our electricity breaks, we need electricians, and we need people who know what they're doing with the plumbing in our houses. And we need experts to fix our cars, and we need people who know what they're doing with scissors to sort out our hair. And we need financial advisors, and we need doctors, and we need teachers, and we need a whole community that we can trust, that know what they're doing and can do their jobs well. And so it's hard when we need one of these people. We worry quite a lot whether we're getting the right painter in, whether we're getting the right electrician in, whether the job's going to be done and it's going to be better, or whether it's going to land up being worse. Sometimes we have to ask our friends, hoping that they have found the perfect dentist or the perfect kind teacher or school that's functioning well. So we rely on our community to help us know who can we trust so that we can get things done. But other than getting things done, we also need people in our lives to look after our hearts, and to share our hearts with and to share our struggles when we are walking on our long, dusty, dry roads uphill. And then as we start growing up, We also need to know when we shouldn't be trusting somebody. We spend a lot of time at school teaching children that they cannot believe that the person who tells them that they're a 12-year-old girl is a 12-year-old girl online. That you haven't really won the 10,000 rand. That you got a message about that you just need to give your details. That advertisers are trying to manipulate you by giving you a sense of unworthiness and fear so that you'll try and fix it with some product or some miracle. That there's fake news out there, that we can't believe everything we read. So we spend a lot of time needing to know as well who we can't trust and who we can trust. And we can't cut out everybody in our lives because we need other people. So how is it that we know who to trust? How do we develop trust in people? Apparently, when we first meet anybody, in the first few seconds of meeting anybody, you're scanning their body language and you're trying to judge immediately, is this person competent? Do they look confident? Do they know what they're talking about? And are they warm? But after a while, we really get to know people by hanging out with them, by being with them. And that becomes our litmus test to see, well, can we trust these people or not? And when we have positive experience with somebody over and over again, then we learn, okay, we can trust that this person has a character that we can trust, not to harm us, not to hurt us. And so a huge part of who we trust is people that we have been with, that we've been spending time with. Or as I say, we may also look for a reference from somebody else to find out if our friend can trust them, maybe we can trust them too. So we build a history with people. So can we trust God? And what are we trusting God for or with? What do our interactions in the past with God tell us about him? And what does the Bible tell us about God's character? So I was thinking, why do I trust God? What makes me think that God is trustworthy, or what history do I have with him? And I was thinking how many a time I've realized that God has a much better perspective over what's going on than I do. My judgment gets very easily clouded by all sorts of things, and often I don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. Whereas I can trust that God knows all the ins and outs and can see all the things that I can't see. And looking back, it's amazing when I look back at all the doors that closed in my life, and then the ones that did open, how often he had a much better plan than the one I thought was plan A. How often his plan E, it seems, was much better than my plan A. And then I'm assured that God is not too busy doing something else to not have time or space for me. And a lot of the time we experience that with people. People have such finite energy and attention, and we all live very busy lives. And people are very busy, and sometimes they're not able to be right there by our side. The amazing thing about God and the history that I have with God is even in the middle of the night, he's there. You can offload your worries in the middle of the night. Because it's weird how worries often come and haunt you in the middle of the night. And I remember as a little girl waking up when I had nightmares and thinking, I really shouldn't wake my parents up. I shouldn't disturb them. And what a delight it is that God is always available to us. And I think he's just thrilled when we even give him any attention or speak to him in any way, particularly when we are being honest. And then I thought of how God and I have a history of him really coming through when I haven't had any plan, or when there seems to be no plan about anything. In 2001, I got into a very difficult set of circumstances that forced me to resign from my job. And I resigned in the September of that year. Now, anyone who knows the teaching cycle will know that we have to give a term's notice before we resign. And that goes for other schools as well. So having resigned in the September, I was hopeful that I would find another job in the September or the October as other people would resign from other schools. And I went to interviews and nothing seemed to fit at all. And by the very end of October, I had to have an honest discussion with myself that the window of opportunity really seemed to have closed. Because, as I say, teachers resign at the beginning of the term when they want to leave, and time was marching on. And this was quite concerning because it started to look like I might need to take a term off, which would have been fine if we were really rolling in money, but both Dylan and I were government school teachers, so it didn't seem like a really good plan either to take a term off and to have a gap term. And every time I prayed about it, I had that horrible story that Wayne preached about 3 weeks ago about Abraham taking his son to be sacrificed. And I just felt that God kept telling me that I needed to sacrifice my identity as a teacher, and that he would provide something. But he didn't only provide something, but he provided something amazing. It absolutely floored me when I was called to the office the one morning to find that a fancy private school named Rodine wanted to interview me. I didn't give them my CV. I didn't approach them. I had done absolutely nothing. I found out later that they had found my CV because I had given my CV to another school, and they didn't have a space, and the one lady ran a sort of recruitment agency, and when that school had told me that they didn't have space, and she said, well, shall I take your CV as part of my recruitment agency, I actually said to her, no, I backtracked very quickly because I was embarrassed that they didn't have a job for me, so I had just approached them just trying to find out whether they had something. Yet somehow my CV had still landed up in her hands, and then it landed up in Rodine's hands. And so God opened a big door that I never knocked on. After a time of really worrying, during that time I often woke up and thought, well, what am I going to do? I don't have a job lined up. This was really stupid of me to resign without a job lined up. And I would have these waves of panic again and again. And it was really a season of surrendering this panic to God again and again. And then I also have a history of being comforted by God in painful situations. There's just something so special about being prayed for. And it just seems so much more powerful than someone advising you or giving you their own earthly wisdom. And the same thing when I've really had moments when I've been able to pour my heart out to God and journal and be honest and express my pain. But it's not just expressing my pain, because I thought back to in my teenage years, I loved to write poems to try and get out my angst and my pain. And To be honest with you, that never felt healing in any way. There's something deeply special about when we invite God into situations and when other people invite God. And there's a comfort, even though things are not lined up immediately, God often waits till the last moment before something falls into place. So what's hard about trusting in God is we would really like to have a deal where he would promise us that we would never have any pain or never experience any difficulties of any kind. And when we look at the Bible, there's not a single person that we can find who lived like this. Can't find any character that didn't have any pain. And even Jesus experienced lots of pain and anguish in his time on earth. There is nowhere where we are promised a pain-free life or that things will go our way at all. In fact, there's troubling verses that say, James 1, verses 2 to 4, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, when you face trials of many kind, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work in you so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. Or John 16, verse 33, I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. So we would love God to take away our pain. And many people struggle to believe in God because of pain and suffering in the world. And the only place that we've been promised to have no suffering is in Revelation, when we've been promised that one day God shall wipe away all tears from our eyes, and there shall be no more death, sorrow, crying, and there shall be no, and neither shall there be any more pain. This is the promise that we have in the future. But while we are on earth, we are going to continue to suffer the consequences of our own sin and the sins and the choices of other people. And God's going to continue working on our character. And how often does he use our difficult circumstances and the ones that require the most perseverance to form our character, to form that perseverance, to teach us to trust properly when other things have been taken away. Mm-hmm. And how often does God actually use our painful experiences to give us a purpose? When I think of how often, as a child, I really felt invisible, and I was the youngest in my class at school, so I didn't do very well at school. And I didn't enjoy primary school, so it's a bit of a weird thing that I've chosen to spend my adult years there. But that struggle has given me real patience for other children who struggle. And I can't help but look for the people who seem invisible at school, the quiet ones that don't want to answer questions. Sometimes I make sure that I put them right in front of me just so that I can find out a bit more about them, because they're hard to get to know. So God often uses the very thing that hurts us to give us purpose. And in the midst of the pain, we can hear God's promise all the time that he will never leave us or forsake us. And we're not alone. And being with people can be such a comfort when we are in pain. I remember in 2021 when we were robbed in our house. My mom came the day afterwards. And she just sat on the patio. She didn't say anything or have wise words. She just was with us. And it's amazing how comforting just having people who we know love us, being there, not saying anything, not doing anything of any description. She literally just sat on the patio all day and engaged with us. And how special that was and how comforting that was. And how much more comforting is the presence of God. However, when we're feeling pain, pain can also undo us. It's very easy to shut ourselves off from ourselves and from other people and even from God. And I've been very interested in a psychologist named Dr. Richard Swartz, who has developed this theory called internal family systems. And he speaks about how we all have a childish part of us and a parenting part inside of us who's telling ourselves off, and an adult that's trying to mediate, all within ourselves as if we have multiple personalities. And he's fleshed this out to say that we all have exile parts. Places that, parts of us that we have said, this is so painful or so bad that we must keep them far away and we must keep this buried. Parts that feel guilt. Parts that have experienced trauma. Parts that are in pain. Parts that just don't behave the way we would like them to behave. How they just don't add to our image when we interact with people. And to keep these parts under control, in his theory, he's got, he says we all have managers. And these managers are protective and very proactive. So they work ahead of the time to prevent pain or to prevent failure in our daily life. So they want to make sure that you feel in control and liked and safe from any pain or old wounds. And these managers exhibit themselves, maybe you've seen them in yourself, by being the perfectionist, trying to make sure that there's going to be no criticism or rejection if you just do everything flawlessly. Or an inner critic telling yourself off, telling you to motivate, trying to keep you motivated and from making mistakes. Or people-pleasing, making sure that everybody around you is happy, trying to avoid conflict and abandonment. Or a controller who's just trying to make sure that there's no uncertainty, that nothing is left to any uncertainty. Or a planner that needs to over-prepare. And the way you know these managers are operating is if they are threatened in some way, or their plans are upset. Then along with the managers, we all have firefighters within us. These firefighters come to life as a reaction. They are reactive protectors. So their job is to extinguish any emotional distress quickly. And that's the part that maybe gets involved in addictions. Screen time, overeating, substances, things that numb, things that provide escape. Or the dissociator that just wants us to detach and avoid things or run away. Or a very angry defender that is angry about everything and blows up and lashes out. Or developing a humor mask that just always has to play the fool and deflect pain. And so in his therapy sessions, he tries to have conversations with these managers and these firefighters. And strangely enough, one of the first things he does is he actually thanks them for doing their job. He thanks them for trying so hard to protect the self from this pain or this guilt, than the exiles And once he's done a lot of gratitude and thanking, he begins to ask some questions about what would happen if they didn't jump into action. What would happen if you didn't plan out the next 6 weeks to perfection? What would happen if you didn't spend 4 hours a day on your phone? And so maybe we have got some parts in us that we need to turn over to God. And I'm sure that you've all got some favorite verses about trusting God and God's faithfulness. And I'm going to read some of those verses, and then I'm going to ask you some questions, and we're going to open it up to ministry. So Proverbs 3, verses 5 to 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Psalm 9, verse 10. Those who know your name trust in you, O Lord, for you have never forsaken those who seek you. Isaiah 26, verses 3 to 4. You keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord God is an everlasting rock. And so a lot of our lives feels like we're on a long, dry, exhausting, dusty road. Do we have times when we know that we can anticipate meeting with God? At the end of the long walk. Sometimes I think our weeks feel like this, where we travel on our long, exhausting, dusty road. Sometimes just coming to church gives us that opportunity to be meeting with God and feel part of a community. What do your past experiences of God tell you about him and his character? Are we putting our trust in places that are far away from God? And finally, are there parts of us that we are keeping exiled away from God, and maybe even away from ourselves to some extent? And so I think before we start praying for one another, let's just close our eyes and spend some time putting ourselves before God and listening to what he might want to say to us right now. Oh, Holy Spirit, we invite you to come and fill us anew. And we ask that you would speak to us and guide us and lead us. So that we can properly follow you and trust you. And we ask, Lord God, that if there are things that we need to turn over to you, that you would bring these things to mind. If we have something that we're trying to squirrel away or hide from you, or exile in some way and protect with something else. That you would grow our faith and our trust in you as mustard seeds grow into big trees. That you would grow our tiny little attempts to offer ourselves to you. And it might be that you're going through something at the moment that is particularly hard or painful or exhausting. And this is really a great time to draw alongside each other and to ask God's presence and ask God for his strength through the things that are difficult and painful.